Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. My pleasure to be here with you, with Kirk, with JB, with James, and also with Lisa. We have four of us here to speak with you this evening. I had thought 2 months ago that we were finished with conspiracy. I thought that when we exposed and condemned the seven conspiracies that were being promoted on UT, and to explain not only that they were false, but to show just how utterly stupid, irrational, ignorant you had to be to believe them. I know there's some people that were awash in UT who are offended when I say that you had to be ignorant and irrational to believe them, but those are the facts.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being ignorant. You can fix being ignorant, at least.
You can. You can fix being ignorant.
You can be ignorant of a lot of things.
Yeah, you can fix being irrational. I have been ignorant of a lot of things myself. I'm sure at times in my life I was irrational. But to be a conspiracy theorist on any one of the seven that we dispelled 2 months ago, you have to be ignorant of the facts and irrational in your thinking. Each of those conspiracies was the purest form of Babel, of intermixing the truth and lies. And for those that may not remember it, those conspiracies were as follows. The myth that the Sandy Hook shooting, the Pulse nightclub massacre, and the Boston Marathon bombing were government ploys. They did not actually occur, but were false flags perpetrated by the U.S. government and political actors to achieve some political means. Second, that 9/11 was perpetrated by the U.S. government, not Islamic jihadists. The fifth conspiracy was that condensation trails coming out of the backs of jet airplane engines are really chemtrails that are the government trying to poison us. Lastly, that the mumps, measles, and rubella vaccine is a principal cause of autism. Those are all conspiracies. None of them are true. And our issue with them is twofold. One is that they were being promoted on a site where those lies were being mixed in with the almost equal portion of Yahweh's testimony. We ought not ever convey Yahweh's name and his testimony in a sea of lies. It is it's very destructive to the credibility of his word. And he specifically tells us not to engage in conspiracies. The second is that conspiracy becomes very much like a religion. Those who believe them become impervious to evidence and reason. They lash out with the zeal of a religious person against those that exposes them. They become true believers. And as such, their ability to make an informed and rational decision about something as important as the Torah, the covenant, the Yahweh, is moot. You can't be so impoverished in your thinking, so undiscriminating in the evidence that you consider credible, as to believe these seven conspiracies and think for a moment that you figured out what is required to be part of God's covenant family. So those are the two reasons we oppose them. And this past week, we have been exposed, in fact, last week and a half, really, to a far more sinister conspiracy, the single worst conspiracy ever conceived by humankind. Had it not been for the fact that this conspiracy is being promoted by someone that we all knew, that we all liked, that we all corresponded with, that we thought was part of the covenant, and had this conspiracy not been the single worst conspiracy ever devised in the history of humankind, and the most in opposition to God Himself, and had this person chosen his own audience to convey it as opposed to within our family, amongst those who have come to consider what we say as part of this program and what we've written in all of these books. And had they not intermixed their poisonous lies with the name of Yahweh and terminology that is found only in my books and programs, we would just say goodbye and good riddance. What in the hell happened to you? But unfortunately, the opposite is true. This is what a week ago today. I found this in my mailbox. It was sent at the conclusion of the chat log of our program last week. It says, "You all are going to have to follow the truth no matter where it takes you." Almost any time you have somebody claiming to know the truth and telling the truth and everybody else has missed the truth, they're part of that truther movement, which is a movement that is steeped in lies. They are in fact the antithesis of what they claim to be. Then it says, he's right, "If Yah says, trust no man, then if you do then trust man, that makes you in opposition, or makes you anti-Yah." We're going to find out here in a moment that Yah doesn't say trust no man. In fact, Yah can't say trust no man. Why do you think that Yahweh can't say trust no man?
When he has prophets.
All of his prophets were men?
Yeah, he had 40 prophets. They were all humans. One of his prophets was a woman. But of the 40 prophets, they were all part of mankind. They were all human, and therefore, to say trust no man, you'd have to reject Moshe. You know, the book of Devarim is Moshe speaking in first person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You'd have to reject that. You'd have to reject the book of Yosha. You'd have to reject the testimony of the Shaphat, judges. You'd have to reject the testimony of Dod and all of his Mizmor Psalms. You'd have to reject the testimony of Yeshayah, Isaiah, Yirmiyah, Jeremiah, at all. You'd even have to reject the testimony of Yosha because he spoke as a man. So God does not say, trust no man. It's a misquote, and we're going to turn to the psalm from which this was pulled out of context and misquoted, because what we're going to find is that Yahweh actually informs us to do what we're going to do. And I wanted to spend a good portion of tonight's program on the psalm, because while it is essential that we remove anti-Semitic rubbish from Yahweh's house, and essential that we stand with Yahweh's chosen people, if we wish to stand with him. First and foremost, we want this program to be enlightening, to be edifying, to be enriching. And the best way to enrich is to share Yahweh's testimony. That does not preclude us exposing, condemning, refuting lies that are in direct opposition to the word of Yah, which we will also do as part of this program. Now, this went on to say, and when the wrath of Gog and Magog, who knows where he got that, because Gog is an individual, Magog is the place, Gog is the leader of Magog, so he's confused, descends upon one's exposing the actual truth as the Son of God did. He is really now fixated. He's become a de facto Christian again. He's rejected the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and is, as we shall find, is now a New Testament fellow. And why he would turn to the wrath of Gog, because Gog and Magog, Gog is the leader of Magog. That's just, it's a Muslim religious and jihadi leader. It's a Muslim being a Nephilim, a Nephal, actually, in the singular. And they will have, what influence do you think that that Gog and his Magog Federation will have on the covenant?
None. They will wipe them out.
Yeah.
None. Absolutely none. What influence do you think that the Magog Federation will have on Gentiles?
Very little.
Yeah. Between very little and none, right? The Magog Federation is designed to attack Yisrael, to wipe out Jews, Yehudim, in Yisrael. That is its entire purpose. And so why he would write that they are somehow going to be a threat, that is somehow going to expose one's actual truth.
Because Yahweh is a liar.
Oh, mm-hmm. I guess. Fred has just gone to the point of being delusional, I guess. You may ask, why them am I then being persecuted as I see few others are being? I don't know why Fred thinks he's being persecuted. He is being opposed. He's being mocked. He's being ridiculed. He's being refuted.
Wait a minute. He was attacking others.
He was being separated from, but he is not being persecuted. Maybe he's saying, why then am I not being persecuted as a few others are being? Maybe he thinks that is somehow tied into the wrath of Gog and Magog. I don't know. That is simply because you are for a physical Israel that has not yet been manifest. Well, let me tell you something. If Israel has not been manifest, we need to tell that to the United Nations. And then after we told it to the United Nations, we ought to tell it to Yahweh, because obviously Yahweh missed that prophecy. Yisrael is absolutely manifest. And there are Yehudim living in Yisrael. When a man tells you not to do this or that, it's when you should begin to question that man. Now, this is really interesting, of course. What he's trying to do is to condemn me because I've separated myself from Fred. And I've said, anybody who wants to agree with Fred on this anti-Semitic rant, I don't want to know, I don't want to correspond with, I don't want to have anything to do with, and that I'm going to take the time to expose and condemn such ridiculous theories as Fred is making. And so what he's saying is, if a guy like Craig tells you that you should not do this or that, then that's when you ought to be questioning him. What he wants to say is, you really shouldn't trust Craig's translations. You really should trust my interpretations of the Greek New Testament. What you really shouldn't do is to, in any way, shape, or form, rely upon the author of the books that brought us all together. What you should do is rely on the mumbling man in the video that I've attached to this that is purporting that Jews are really not Jews, and that, in fact, there are no Abrahamic Jews left in the world today, which makes it impossible for Yahweh to fulfill any of his prophecies. It ultimately is proposed by, and this mumbling man in the video is a Christian. It's a theory that is proposed by anti-Semitic Christians to fulfill their desire to validate replacement theology. What they want, since they hate Jews, is they want all of the promises that Yahweh made to Yisrael ought to be fulfilled through them because they're such swell fellows. But that ain't going to happen. Replacement theology has absolutely no basis in fact and is vehemently opposed by Yahweh. This then goes on to bring up the issue that Lisa will debate later in our program. He writes, the Khazarians are known as the serpent people. They have stealthily maneuvered their way into all aspects of our lives. Ooh, you know that the serpent people are in. By the way, I'm not even sure there is a Khazarian in the world today. That's why it's so difficult to prove the DNA and historical links to them. They really assimilated with other people throughout the region. But we'll speak about that in a moment. And I don't think they're known as anything, much less the serpent people. They have stealthily, oh, this is the conspiracy, maneuver their way into all aspects of our lives. Conspiracy. You need to wake up. Yosha meant it when he said they are of the devil and there is no truth in them. By the way, I don't recall Yosha ever mentioning the Khazarians. Did I miss something?
You know, this is beginning to sound like a Tex-Mars conspiratorial magazine. Incredible.
Yeah, like written by a three-year-old. Now, Fred, of course, is wrong on all accounts. In fact, and by the way, if there's those of you who are upset that I'm mocking a man that you have known, corresponded with, and like, I make no apologies. When a man goes this far off the deep end, and when he uses names like Yosha, you're not going to find Yosha written anywhere outside of my books. People who have copied from my books.
Yep.
When someone, or even Yah, or Yahweh, when you see that kind of thing intermixed with such horrid vitriol, this is the consequence. And if you don't like it, you know, go away. You know, this is what we're going to find. So I'm going to share now the passage which is the closest to trust no man. It doesn't actually say that. Because that whole passage is about a celebration of Yahweh empowering Doe to do exactly what we're doing and why it is essential to do what we're doing. So, well, Yah never says trust no man. The closest statement to it. We find that Dode is commended by Yahweh to do precisely what we are doing today, exposing deceit. I'm going to share now a translation of the 118th Mizmor Psalm for your consideration. When we are done with it, we will examine the myth of the Khazarian Jews. Stay tuned. All right, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to engage here. I've translated this today and yesterday, actually. And there's no commentary whatsoever, just a translation. And so feel free to add your insights and ask any questions you may have. It begins, you all should choose to acknowledge and express your gratitude for the actions and attributes so as to approach Yahweh, because he is generous, beneficial, and good. This Mizmor is going to begin and end with an interesting word, yada. Yada means of your own free will, recognize and extol your appreciation for the nature and power. It is from yad, which is the hand, the influence, the power, and support, and yada, which means to know the influence of, to acknowledge the power of, to recognize the hand of, and to relate to the support from, in this case, Yahweh. To discern, to discriminate, to distinguish, to know by experience, and to admit. By the way, Ya'uda, you've heard of Ya'uda, that's strange in this conversation, right?
Yeah.
You familiar with the Ya'uda?
Ya'uda.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, Ya'uda...
I've heard it once or twice.
Yeah, you've heard it once or twice, yeah. I have, in my books, defined Ya'uda as to relate to and to be related to Yah. And the reason for that is that Yahuda is a combination of a name and a word, Yahweh and Yada. And Yada is based on Yad and Yada. Yada is, by the way, Y-D-H, Yada. And the verb Yada, to know, to acknowledge, to recognize, is Y-D-L-F. So those are the how closely, how similar they are. They sound identical. They're written very similarly. And, of course, Yod is central to both of them. So you could say, in a way, that that Yahuda means to recognize the hand, the influence, and the support of Yahweh. It is to acknowledge and to express your gratitude for the actions and attributes of Yahweh. It is to relate to recognize, to appreciate, to know, to acknowledge Yahweh. Powerful name.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you should choose to acknowledge and express your gratitude for the actions and attributes of so as to approach Yahweh, because he is Tov. One of our favorite words, Tov. Yahweh is Tov. He is generous, beneficial, and good. He is festive, beautiful, pleasing, and enjoyable. Tov is the antithesis of Ra. Remember, it was the tree of the knowledge of good? Well, good is Tov, and evil, Ra. Yahweh is the antithesis of Ra. He is Tov. Generous, beneficial, good, festive, pleasing, beautiful, and enjoyable. Indeed, accordingly, his steadfast love and unfailing mercy, his chesed, are eternal. There is the myth propagated in the Christian New Testament, particularly by Paul, that the law is is cruel, that it cannot save, that you either have to obey all of the law or you're condemned by a single statement in it. Mm-hmm. But here it says that unfailing mercy, steadfast love of Yahweh are eternal. Oops. I guess they must have missed that part. Then this begins with one of the most interesting Hebrew words. It's na. It means please. It is my desire, and I am exhorting you now at this time with all of the urgency and intensity that I can muster, entreating you. Now, entreating whom? Entreating the Khazarians?
No, it was the black Hebrew Israelites.
Entreating the Gentiles? Entreating the church? No. Please, Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God, please, Yisrael, let's, of our own volition, express in words, amar. We should genuinely choose of our own free will to continuously say, this was written in the call, imperfect, juicing. that his love and mercy, his chesed, endure forever. Please, Yisrael, let us of our own volition express in words that his love and mercy endure forever. Then,
what kind of Lord says please?
Well, of course, this is Dode writing, but who was Dode inspired by?
Yahweh is
saying please, and by the way, of your own free will.
Yeah.
The Jews is an expression of free will. And by the way, the call means literally, genuinely, and the imperfect means to do it on an ongoing basis. One please was not enough. Please, nah. It is my desire, and I'm exhorting you at this time, with all of the urgency and intensity that I can muster, encouraging you, family of Aaron. Aaron means enlightened free will and choice. The light, it means to crave, to desire, and love light. Let us, of our own volition, express in words, because his affection and kindness, especially his favorable treatment and resulting benefits, endure forever. Where does Yah offer his favorite treatment and benefits?
The Torah.
The Torah, by way of what?
By way of the covenant.
Correct.
The Moed.
The Moed Mikre facilitate the benefits of the covenant. They make the benefits of the covenant possible, but the covenant is the place where those who engage and act upon it receive these benefits, and they receive the benefits, of course, by way of the Moed Mikre. So both answers would be correct, but this says that this endures forever. A second endures forever. La olam, to approach infinity, enabling us to draw near forever. So please, family of Aaron. Why do you think he chose family of Aaron here as opposed? So first was please Yisrael, and now it's please family of Aaron.
But it's more than good. Well, it's...
What does family of Aaron imply?
Everyone that does this free will doesn't have to be just the Yehuda.
Who was Aaron's younger brother?
Moshe.
Moshe. Moshe was Aaron's younger brother. What did Moshe provide to us?
The Torah.
The Torah, right. And what did Moshe do in conjunction with Yahweh? Lead us out of oppression of Christian religious schemes and political schemes and military schemes. And when Moshe said, I'm not a very good speaker, and I don't really think I'm qualified to do this, why did Yahweh recommend his brother Aaron?
He was a good speaker.
Ah, because he spoke clearly and vociferously, right?
Yes.
So the family of Aaron are those who speak clearly and vociferously of their own free will about the enlightenment, the desire to love the light that is derived by those who observe the Torah and engage in the covenant. The fact that it's a family means we're dealing with the covenant.
Yeah. Okay, and that would include all who sojourn with Yisrael, Yehuda. It doesn't matter. You have enlightened free will. You know of the covenant. Your family.
Right.
Your family.
I'm part of the family of Aaron, even though I'm not a descendant of the Lowy. And those people that were listening to him in Yisrael, which I've been grafted into, they did not have to be a descendant of Aaron. This is the family of Aaron. Those who have joined the family because of what Aaron represents. By the way, Aaron is also used to describe the Ark of the Covenant. Let us of our own volition express in words. Because his affection and kindness, especially his favorable treatment and resulting benefits, endure forever. I am exhorting, this is a third nah, please. Not very lordly of God, is it? I am exhorting those of you now at this time, with all of the urgency and intensity I can muster now, please. Those who respect and revere Yahweh, to genuinely and consistently choose to convey this. Because indeed, His love, mercy, favorable treatment, and resulting benefits are eternal, enabling us to draw near through all time. So the first group that he was pleading with to say this was Yisrael. The second group was the same group, the family of Aaron. The third is the comprehensive of all of us, those who have come to respect and revere Yahweh. Yare. Those who observe the profound awesomeness and astonishing majesty of Yahweh. And what are we called to do?
Set the covenant. Understand.
To genuinely and consistently choose to convey that Yahweh's chesed, His love, His mercy, His affection, endure forever. Now, the only way that it can endure forever, His love and mercy and affection, is for those who are the beneficiaries, those who are part of Yisrael, of the house and family of Aaron, and of those who respect and revere Yahweh, we have to endure forever. Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible for Yahweh's love and mercy to endure forever. So this is a really good thing. That's why he wants us to say it. Then he gets personal. He says, from the most distressful and confining situation, ha metzar. It sounds like he's describing a similar circumstance to what was endured in Mitzarim, Egypt, in the crucibles of human oppression. From the most distressful and confining situation, ha metzar, the anguishing and troubling condition associated with being hemmed in and bound up. In the feminine, Metzara means to be alert and observant, watchful so as to guard against being taken by surprise by a future action or contingency. It is akin to Mitzrayim, the crucibles of oppression manifest in Egypt. So from the most distressful and confining situation, I called upon Ikara, Yahweh. I invited, I summoned, I greeted, I welcomed, I proclaimed, I read, I recited, Yahweh. And he answered me, Ana Ani. He responded to me. He offered testimony which provided the evidence and answers I needed with openness and complete freedom in Yahweh. Actually, I misspoke there. The end of this, as is many of the times that Yahweh was mentioned in this Mizmor, in these lyrics, at the conclusion it wasn't Yahweh. Which is simply Yah, the familial form of Yah, of the familiar form of Yahweh. So, in the most distressful and confining situation, what Dod did is he called upon, he invited, he summoned, he greeted, he welcomed, he proclaimed, he read and recited Yahweh. And what did Yahweh do? He answered with openness, freedom, the vastness of the infinite expanses enabling extensive growth associated with Yah. If you have a question, Yahweh answers the question in the Torah, the Navi and Mizmor, prophets and Psalms. If you got a question for God, read, observe what he had to say. He answers every important question. Even here, if you want to know what should you do if you're in a dire situation? Recite and proclaim Yahweh's name. Invite him into your presence. Welcome him. You can welcome him. You can greet him by doing kara, reading and reciting his name in the midst of his testimony. And you will find that he will answer you too. He will do so openly and providing you with great freedom and expansive growth, all associated with himself, with Yah.
So why would I have to go outside of anywhere outside of the Torah?
I mean, worked for Dod.
Yeah.
Didn't it? Yeah. And Dod was in some pretty tight situations, wasn't he?
Terrible situations.
Yeah. Worked for him. In fact, I would dare to say that the single most important man in the history of the world is Dod. The only man that could claim to be as important as Dod would be Moshe. And Moshe, not because he went with Yah to liberate the chosen people. Because God loved using Moshe to do that because he wanted his name proclaimed by someone whose diction wasn't great. And he wanted to go with somebody that already knew the Egyptians so that he didn't have to spend a lot of time explaining about them. He wanted to go with a man who wasn't seeking fame and fortune, who, you know, was actually reluctant to go. The fact is, he could have done that with anyone. Dod is a special case. Dod's intellect is extraordinary. Dod is the one that tells us how to properly observe the Torah. Dod is the one who reveals the single most important aspect of Yahweh's Torah, which is that the Torah was not written to condemn, as Paul said, those who have made a mistake, those who have sinned. Dod sinned more times, by his own admission, than he had hairs on his head. The Torah was written to perfect the imperfect. Dod is the poster boy. There was very few people that were as imperfect as Dod, and yet Yahweh called him perfect because he was right when it came to his understanding of Yahweh and what Yahweh was offering. So this extraordinary man, who I think is the brightest man who ever lived, the most brilliant writer who ever lived, he did what we ought to do. When we're in trouble, when we have questions, invite Yahweh into our presence by reading and reciting his testimony, and he will answer. All of the answers are found in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He says, Yahweh drew near, approaching me. So I will not respect nor revere what, why, or how mankind responds towards me. So rather than God saying, don't trust man here, what Dod is being inspired to write is, because Yahweh approached him, because Yahweh drew near, because Yahweh provided his answers, because Yahweh was there when he needed him, there is no reason to respect or revere what mankind does. And especially, we should not respect what mankind says about us. You know, I received a number of letters this week that were really unkind. And they took me to task.
Me too.
One reason or another. As I read them, well, I've got lots of faults. I just didn't agree with much of anything that was written in these letters. And I wrote back politely, but bluntly, I don't agree with you. And here are the reasons I don't agree with you. And what Yahweh said is the opposite of what secular humanists with political correctness and academia and let's be nice to everyone Christians love your enemy would suggest. He says, don't respect what people say about you. Don't respect them. We ought not fear it. We ought not be concerned about it. But we most certainly ought not respect what people say. Dod didn't. All Dod cared about is what Yahweh had to say, not what people had to say about it. Yahweh approaches. Now, this, by the way, is the seventh statement, and we're approaching this. Why, in particular, this was the closest statement in the whole Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. to don't trust man. So this actually says, so I will not respect nor revere what, why, or how mankind responds and acts towards me. As you know, what, why, or how is from the Hebrew interrogatory. It means it's ma. Mankind, this is Adam, humankind, the descendants of Adam, man, responds and acts towards me. Yahweh approaches me by helping me. I shall look upon and expose those who hate me, those who oppose me. Isn't that interesting? Now, that's the old Christian myth is don't judge lest you be judged, based upon a errant translation of the Greek, which was an errant translation of the Hebrew. And Yahweh is inspiring Dode to say here, Yahweh approaches helping me, so I shall look upon and expose those who hate me. I'm going to oppose, I'm going to expose, I'm going to inspect, I'm going to reveal those who hate me. I'm not going to love them. I'm not going to embrace them. I'm not going to respect them. Just the opposite. This is Mizmor 118:7. It is better and more productive, it's Tob, to approach being confident and reliant, firmly trusting in Yahweh, apart from men, as opposed to naively trusting so as to stumble and become vulnerable by carelessly relying in mankind. That's the closest there is in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to God says, don't trust man. Not what he said here. It's Adam, those who represent humankind. Yeah, the man, Adam, the first descendant who chose poorly and was separated. So it is better and more productive to approach being confident and relying, firmly trusting, this is Batek. It's interesting here, by the way, that Batek, which is to have confidence inspired by relying, that's from 4QPS, because the Masoretic has Chaka, which we'll find in the next statement. Chaka means to be kept safe by trusting, taking refuge. But according to the Dead Sea Scrolls, the verb here was batek, which is it is better to approach being confident and reliant, firmly trusting. So if you're checking this in an English translation, you'll find them, it is better to seek refuge. But the actual word, according to the Dead Sea Scrolls, is batek. It is better and more productive to approach being confident and reliant by firmly trusting in Yahweh, apart from naively trusting so as to stumble and become vulnerable by carelessly relying. Now, this is batak. Now, batak has a number of meanings. It can just mean put confidence in, have faith in, to the point of reliance. But the secondary definitions of batak are pertinent in the when it's being presented as this is not a good idea. So the secondary and tertiary definitions of batak are stumbling and falling, tripping by taking an unsuspected and undefended misstep, losing control and becoming vulnerable in Ha'adam, in mankind. Now, if God wanted to say you should not trust a man, which is the implication, it would have been an individual. It would have been singular.
It would have been a different word.
Ish. Yeah, it would have been ish. Singular ish. Male individual. Because Ha'adam is used to speak of mankind.
Right.
And, by the way, God is going to define who represents those that should not be carelessly relied upon in the next statement. So God's pretty good at this. This is why if you take something out of context and misquote it, as Paul, of course, based his entire treatise on taking something out of context and misquoting it to create the opposite impression. Yahweh, in context, almost always explains precisely what he's referring to. So in mankind, that's going to be explained in the next statement. It is good, desirable, and beneficial. Tov again. Pleasing, better. Valuable, generous, and productive. It reveals one's moral character and is expected to be kept safe by trusting and confiding. Jaka. This is the word that was replaced in the Masoretic in the previous statement. To be kept safe by trusting and confiding. Take refuge, finding safety and comfort, being protected and sheltered. So there's a lot more to Jaka than taking refuge. It's being kept safe by trusting and confiding, being protected and sheltered in Yahweh, as opposed to placing one's confidence and hopes, matak, in political leaders and religious officials, nadib. So the mankind that you ought not trust so as to avoid stumbling are nadib. N-A-D-Y-B, political leaders and religious officials. They are rulers, princes, nobility, those who spontaneously and freely act of their own initiative, those who willingly and voluntarily seek positions of influence, control, and status in government or other human institutions. It's from Nadab, who take the initiative to willingly incite and impel. Since he wrote that against me, it's, you know, if you trust me, you're anti-Yah, is what his implication was. Yeah, I didn't know that I had chosen to run for political office, or that I held a religious title, or some authority.
Or that you're a prince. There you go.
Or that I'm a prince or royalty.
Yeah, I'd be remiss not to mention that Nadib... Nadib is a very popular Arabic word in the Muslim countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because...
And one of its meanings is a willingness to incite and impel.
Yes. Arabic is Hebrew.
Yeah.
The Arabic alphabet is the Hebrew alphabet. When the Quran says it was written in pure Arabic, it was written in a bastardized Hebrew. You know, there wasn't a written Arabic until about the 7th century CE. And at the time, Assyrians developed an alphabet for spoken Arabic using the Hebrew alphabet. And therefore, almost every Arabic word has its basis in Hebrew, including the most important religious word in Arabic,
right.
Quran, from the Hebrew kara, meaning the same thing, to read and recite. So that should not be surprising. But God has clearly defined who the mankind is that one ought not trust. They're political leaders and religious officials. Rulers, princes, nobility, those who spontaneously and freely act of their own initiative, those who willingly and voluntarily seek positions of influence, control, and status in government and other human institutions, from Nadab, those who take the initiative to willingly incite and impel. Okay. So you got that wrong, Fred. Oops. The totality of Gentiles and their pagan nations encircle and surround me in the personal name and reputation of Yahweh, because I warded them off, disassociating from them. Now, there's two ways to render the end of this, but the beginning of it is clear. The second way to render the end of it is, in the name of Yahweh, indeed and truthfully, I will cut them off and disassociate from them. Now, both renderings are acceptable. But let's lay it out here. Here's Dod. He is a Yahud. In fact, he is the ultimate Yahud. You cannot be more Yahud than Dod was. The totality of whom? Who is the foe here? goyim.
Goyim.
Who comprises the anti-Israelite church of Christianity?
The goyim.
Goyim. Absolutely. Goyim. Gentiles. Pagan nations. Of course, Christianity is a pagan religion with its Trinity, but not just because of its Trinity and its God existing in three persons, but because the Trinity of Christianity is based upon the Trinity of the Babylonian religion, the Assyrian religion, the Egyptian religion, the Roman religion, and the Greek religion. So the Gentiles, goyim. Those disassociated from Yisrael. From Yahweh's perspective, there is Yisrael and there are goyim. People are either Yisrael or they are goyim. It is possible to be a goyim.
It's a very binary perspective.
Yes, binary perspective. There are two groups of people in the world. You are either Yisrael or you are goyim. Period. End of conversation. That's it. Yisrael and goyim. Now, Yahud. Dim and Yahud, singular, is a subset of Yisrael. So they are either Yisrael or you are Goyim. That's it. And so if you are a Goyim and you wish to be something else from God's point of view, what is your option?
Yisrael.
It's going to be Yisrael, right?
That's what I want to be.
Yeah, if you are a goyim and you want to be with God, you have to become Yisrael. If you are Yisrael and don't want to be God, you need to act like the
goyim.
Goyim. What did Yahweh tell Yisrael never to do? Ever emulate the ways of the goyim. Don't ever, ever, ever do that. What have they done?
Everything they do.
Exactly that.
The goyim.
Right, right. As goyim, and I'm speaking for myself, Kirk and JB, not for you, Lisa. As former goyim, to become Yisrael, what did we need to do first and foremost?
Walk away from our country.
Walk away.
Right.
Yes.
Walk away from the ways of the goyim. Disassociate from the goyim. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Babylon was the ultimate in goyim. Goyim have country. You know that goy can and goyim can be translated nations?
Yes,
walk away from your country. This is really essential to this particular position of Yahweh. The enemy of Dod, and Dod is the advocate of Yahweh, the Torah, and the covenant. The enemy of those things are the Gentiles and their pagan nations. And according to Dode, the Gentiles and their pagan nations encircle and surround me. Now, is that literally true or figuratively true? Do we know of any time when Dode was surrounded by Gentile nations, plural?
No, he usually only had one enemy at a time.
Right. And his biggest enemy... The one that really tried to do him in was Shaul.
Yeah.
And Shaul certainly isn't a Gentile.
No.
Yeah. So, goyim, those disassociated from Israel, non-Hebrews, the world in general, non-Israelite civilization, a confluence of men who are destined to die as a result of their body politic, those from populations comprised of heathen, animalistic, and arrogant individuals who were passed over and cut off. It's from Goya, to be left behind in one's body because of lifting up that which is physical, pridefully. Related to Goya, corpses and carcasses of dead and decomposing human bodies, as well as people who are treated as if they were mere chattel and possessed by others. Your Goy... your chattel. You are the property of the Lord. You are the subject of your country. If you're Yisrael, you've been liberated and empowered by Yahweh. So the totality of the Gentile and their pagan nations encircle and surround me. Interesting. They reverse course and go around me, turning against me, changing regarding me from kebab to turn around and go in the opposite direction, akin to Kobe, to be habitually inebriated and intoxicated so as to become a moral failure while entangled in a thorny weed. You know, the thorn that is Pauline Christianity, the thorn in its side, the demon from Satan. They encircle and surround me, the Kabbalah, in the personal name and reputation of Yahweh, because I warded them off and disassociated from them. Now, you're at two options here. You can either say that they encircled and surrounded him in the reputation of Yahweh, you know, claiming that God was on their side, you know, like
that. Oh, yes.
And because of that, he warded them off and disassociated from them. Or you can say that after these pagans, these Gentiles, these dead men walking, encircled and surrounded him, that in the personal and proper name of Yahweh, he warded them off, disassociated from them. But either way that you take this, and both are fine, and in fact, in the next statement, I'm going to render it more in this in the second way. What was Doe's response to those who were surrounding and encircling him? To say, well, let's reason together. Let's come up with a compromise. Let's all love one another. Let's be tolerant of one another.
We'll have them all inclusive and multicultural.
He mul him. You know what mul, when mul is presented in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it is typically translated as what, James?
Circumcised.
You betcha. And what it, to circumcise means to cut off and separate, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yep.
Right. Well, the mul, the basis of circumcision, is broader than just the concept of severing the foreskin of one's genitalia. It is, I warded them off. I disassociated from them. I circumcised them in the sense of cutting them off, cutting them down and separating from them, destroying their claims, cutting them to pieces by opposing them. This is the hippal imperfect, the subject dode, causes the object, those who are opposing him, to participate in their own demise and disassociation, doing so consistently. Yahweh doesn't want us to love our enemies. He doesn't want us to embrace those who oppose him and his family, particularly someone who is inspired by him. He wants us to oppose them, to disassociate from them, to circumcise them from our midst. You know, I had two people that I care about deeply that wrote me when the argument between Fred and Dee, and I think also between Fred's supporters and you too, Lisa, first arose. In fact, you may be the first to expose him. When he began to promote this myth that Jews are not Jews, there are no Abrahamic Jews alive today, so that the Jews who are pretending to be Jews in Israel are really a brood of vipers in association with Satan, was his premise. And you said no. That's inappropriate. It's inconsistent with Yahweh's testimony. You ought not say that. It is not only untrue, it's probably the most heinous of all conspiracies. I'm paraphrasing here. And I had two people write me and say, you know, I left Facebook because of the argument. It was the tone of the argument that caused me to leave. And they didn't even mention what the argument was over. Well, I'm going to tell you, Doe's tone in this argument is not pleasant. It's not loving. It's not accepting. It's not nurturing. It's not compromising. It's judgmental. It's condemning. He separates from them. He cuts them down. He tears them to pieces. And he was inspired by Yahweh to say that. That is really important for us to know.
Yeah.
He repeats, they encircle and surround me. the Bob awning. They reversed course. Boy, we've seen a lot of those. The people we thought we knew, they reversed course, and they have gone after me, turning against me. They change regarding me from kebab to turn around and go in the opposite direction, akin to Kobe, to be habitually inebriated and intoxicated so as to become a moral failure when entangled in a thorny weed. They encircle and surround me. Besides, they have turned against me, going roundabout using circular reasoning, kebab awning. They have reversed course and gone after me, changing the direction and position regarding me, becoming threatening and dangerous, coming at me from all directions. In the name of Yahweh, indeed, truthfully, I will cut them off, disassociating from them, mul him. I will cut them down and separate from them by destroying their claims, slicing them to pieces, opposing them while being circumcised from them. That's pretty clear, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Crystal clear.
It isn't judge not lest you be judged. Disassociate. Cut them off. Separate from them. Destroy their claims. That was the 11th statement of Mizmor 118. I'm a fan of Dode. They have make no apologies here, but I could spend all day with Dode. They have encircled me like bees, like Deborah, a swarm of wild bees. It's the feminine of Debar. These bees are conversing, they're threatening, they're promising. They have encircled me like wild bees that want to sting me. They are extinguished and snuffed out. They cease to engage. They stop such activities. They die out and vanish. Da'ak, like a fire among abhorrent thorns, like a fire in a severed, twisted, and loathsome, even sickening wick. In the name of Yahweh, because indeed, I mul him, I cut them off with an oath to stop them. I fended them off, repelled them, adverting them by circumcising myself from them. I turned them away while opposing and condemning them, cutting them down and destroying them while separating myself from them. They surrounded me like bees. Oh, boy, I remember, Lisa, as we were trying to separate from UT, they encircled us like bees.
Ooh, yeah.
But they are extinguished.
And even now.
Yeah, and they are extinguished and stuffed out and snuffed out. They cease to engage. They stop such activities. They die up and they vanish like a fire, a flame-burning combustible material, like flashing lightning among abhorrent thorns and a severed, twisted, and loathsome, even sickening wick. In the name of Yahweh, because indeed I cut them off with an oath to stop them. I'm sure they didn't stop yabbering the moment Dode cut them off. They didn't stop yabbering the moment he took an oath to stop them. He didn't stop trying to sting him the moment he repelled them and circumcised himself from them. But their sting no longer mattered. They couldn't get at him. He had separated himself from them, and their lies regarding him no longer prevailed, because he had destroyed them. 12th statement. You are all tottering and exposing yourself to grave danger by attempting to push me backward and trip me up. This is a repeat of Daka. It's Daka, Daka, Annie. By trying to bring me down and overthrow me, treading upon me, you stumble all over yourselves, and as a result, you will all be driven away, brought down, destroyed, and punished, falling to the lowest status as complete outcasts. Hoping that I might fall and be seen as inferior in the fall, expecting the attack and implied opposition to negate what I've done, to ruin my credibility, to cause others to neglect my efforts, suggesting I will fail and be cast down in an untimely manner, as an aborted carcass. But Yahweh, supported and assisted me. Now, I'm not claiming that we are at the same position as was Dode.
No, this is not. We're not inspired.
Yeah.
We just translate.
Sure. But I'm telling you that exactly what Dode was claiming was happening to him, and the result is exactly what happened to us, and exactly the same result. This passage that Fred wrote to try to undermine my credibility, saying that if you trust me, you're anti-Yah, was his statement. It leads us to a revelation that is exactly the antithesis of what he had wanted to convey. Yeah. They all of the UTers, those who were poisoned by UT, you're all tottering and exposing yourselves to grave danger by attempting to push me backwards and trip me up, hoping that I might fall and be seen as inferior. But Yahweh supported and he assisted me. You were hoping and expecting the attack and implied opposition would negate what I've done, ruin my credibility, and cause others to neglect my efforts, suggesting that I will fail and be cast down in an untimely manner as an aborted carcass.
Hardly.
You know, when you were...
I felt it many times.
Yeah, of course. And you know, every time that I have... I've been up against it. There wasn't enough time in the day to prepare for this program. And yet I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to, because I have a hunch that the statement that he misquoted, took out of context, is going to lead to something profound, something worth knowing, something edifying, something uplifting, something encouraging, something that tells us that we're doing the right thing by exposing
and there it is,
condemning it, separating from those who advocate such lies. And what did we find?
There it is.
There it is. I mean,
the
unambiguously laid right out in front of us.
Yeah.
Yahweh is my strength, my fortification, and power. It doesn't say Yahweh here. I'm sorry. I'm so accustomed to saying it because you very seldom see Yah written in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's there. So it's okay to use the familial form, and no one was closer to him than Dode. This is Yah. Yah is my strength, fortification, and power. He's on a first-name basis with the creator of the universe. Yah provides my empowerment and protection. He is the reason I can withstand all of this and the reason I'm so stubborn and unwilling to change. And therefore, facilitates my ability to compose expressive lyrics and sing. Isn't that amazing? So here he was under attack by these Gentiles, all these stinging, swarming wild bees with their slanderous words, trying to bring him down, trying to negate everything he stood for, everything he had written, everything he had done, trying to belittle him. And he says, Yah is my strength, my fortification, and therefore he is the one that facilitates my ability to compose expressive lyrics and sing. He's the reason, the inspiration behind the Mizmor, the Psalms. And what's also interesting is that out of being attacked, Dode reached out to Yahweh for support. Because he was attacked, Dode reached out to Yahweh for support. And because he reached out to Yahweh, Yahweh answered him. And those answers facilitated the lyrics of this and every other song. That's the order of things. Life is challenging. If it isn't challenging, we never seek help. When it is challenging and we seek Yahweh's help, he answers us. And when he answers us, our words are inspired by him. Our words convey the lyrics of his songs. And he has become the means to my salvation. He's my Savior. So right. He has become, he exists as Haya. My means to, La Ani La. Yahusha. Now, Yahuwah in this particular cake, or Yasho, yeah, I should say, it's Yashoyah, Y-A-S-H-O-W-A-H. It's pronounced very similar to Yahusha, but it's Yasha from the verb Yasha. Yeah, my salvation, my Savior. That's what he has become by way of those answers, through those lyrics. The sound of rejoicing by expressively singing and of salvation is in the home and dwelling place of those who are right and thus vindicated. So the sound of rejoicing by expressively singing, of communicating the message joyfully in words which describes and proclaims this desirable situation and salvation, the liberty and deliverance, is in the home and dwelling place of those who are right and thus vindicated. You want to know how to receive salvation, liberation, deliverance from Yahweh? Well, you'll find it in the house of those who are upright, of those who are right, of those who are tzedak, being correct, being honest. The hand, this is Yamin, the right side and southern orientation. By the way, the right side and southern orientation, by implication, is Yahudah in comparison to the rest of Yisrael, southernmost position. So the right hand, and by implication, Yahudah, of Yahweh, engages and acts. The right hand, by implication, Yahudah, of Yahweh, lifts up. The southern orientation, Yahudah, when distinguished from the rest of Israel, of Yahweh, is enabled to engage powerfully with tremendous ability. Chayil. Yahudah, which is Dod represents Yahudah, was enabled by Yahweh to engage and act, and to do so with tremendous agility, extraordinary power, able to complete the task at hand. He says, therefore, I shall not be killed or die. I shall not be put to death prematurely. I shall not be murdered, assassinated, or destroyed. For I shall not perish and be absent of life, but instead I shall continuously live. Chaya. My life will be restored and preserved. I will actually be revived, consistently nurtured, genuinely raised up, and always grow, flourishing. It's from Chaya, to remain alive, to restore and sustain life so as to make the means to abundant life known. So I shall not die, but instead I shall continuously live, and by doing so, recount and proclaim the record of the work of Yah. Recount and proclaim, provide a written accounting and documentation of the labor, the pattern of behavior, the business, the occupation, the pursuits, the action, and things accomplished and undertaken by Yah. For him to live was to tell Yah's story, to say what Yah would do. What is indeed the 22nd and 88th Mizmor Psalm? It's the pursuits, the work of Yahweh. When he speaks of Yahweh being his shepherd, that's the work, the pattern of behavior of Yah. When he says here that I was encircled by these Gentiles, by this swarm of stinging bees, and Yah answered him, that's the work of Yah. That's the pursuit, the actions, the response of Yah. 17th statement. Yah has provided correct instruction and to discipline me. You want to be disciplined and you want to be instructed. This is Yakar, Yakar, Ani. Is in control and has taught me to listen to reason, teaching me how to be disciplined and right, revealing what is going to happen and the consequences of these actions so that I'm forewarned. And it's not giving me over to the plague of death. Whoa.
No. Wow. Let me know what that is.
Yeah, Pauline Christianity. Yah has provided correct instruction to discipline me. Yah is in control and has taught me to listen to reason, teaching me how to be disciplined and right, revealing what is going to happen and the consequences of those actions so that I am forewarned. And he shall not give me over to Lo Eban Ani, the plague of death, Laha Ma'ut, the pandemic disease that destroys the preponderance of a population.
Can I just make a comment here?
Sure, sure.
Really quick. When I read these two correctly translated, what I see here is the same playing out in where do you find the kefar, the covering? It's in the Torah.
Right.
Who carries
right.
the Torah? The house of Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
And when he speaks of correct instruction and the work of Yah, that's in the Torah. And then you have the plague of death. Then you have the plague of death. Where is that found? Well, in the Holy
Pauline
Bible.
Pauline letters of the New Testament. Yeah, the Pauline letters.
Yeah, the Holy Bible.
Mm. Right. That's where the plague of death comes from, is the Pauline letters of that comprise half of the Christian New Testament. That is, according to Yahweh, the plague of death. And here is Dode saying that he was not turned over to that. He was not susceptible to that because Yahweh provided correct instruction to discipline him. The source of Yahweh's instruction is Torah. Torah means source of instruction, guidance, teaching, and direction. All you have to know is know the words, and this is straightforward. Yahweh has provided correct instruction to everyone who will read his Torah. It's all there. Not the Talmud, not the Christian New Testament, not the Septuagint.
Nope.
Not the Quran. Not the Constitution of the United States. You want correct instruction, read the Torah. Yeah,
Hebrew.
I'll tell you what's
Torah.
Going to happen, the consequence of what's going to happen, so that you are properly prepared. You know, Yahweh communicated it in Hebrew. Read it in Hebrew. It's not that hard. It really isn't that hard. It took me a day to translate, what is there, 21 statements, 21 verses, and Psalm 118 took me a day. So, day well spent. Translate it. Yahweh has provided correct instruction to discipline me, and he has not given me over to the plague of death. It is by choice that open for me are the gates of righteousness. I choose to enter through them while electing to confess the attributes and expressing thanks, yada, to Yah. I told you that yada would be used to close the psalm as it was used to open it.
There it is.
It is by choice that open for me, patah, la, ani, generous and free for me, is the unstoppable response such that are the gates of righteousness. So open for him, unstoppable in their response, are the gates of tzedek, of being correct, the gates of being honest, the gates of being fair, the gates of being accurate, the gates of being proper, the gates of being just, the gates of being in accord with the standard, and thus innocent. It is by choice that open for me are the gates of righteousness, of tzedek. I choose to enter, Bo, of my own free will. I've decided to arrive, to come in, and to be included through them, Bahem, while electing to confess the attributes and expressing thanks to Yah, while desiring to extol the virtues publicly, and of my own volition, acknowledging the power, choosing to express my gratitude for the hand, influence, and support, recognizing, knowing, experience, and relating to Yah. As what? A yada, Yah? That's Yahuda. What he said right here. As Yahuda. This is the one and only doorway. Zeh HaShaar. This is the specific and lone gateway, assembly and meeting place of Yahweh. Those who are right shall approach and enter. Those who are tzedak, correct, upright, in accord with the proper standard, and thus vindicated and innocent, shall approach and enter. I have chosen to acknowledge you, knowing that you have chosen to know me. It is my desire, and as an expression of my free will, to express my appreciation for your nature and power, recognizing that it is your desire for me to experience and relate to you. To experience you, to relate to you, to recognize, to understand, to acknowledge you, even to appreciate you. Because indeed, you responded to me and provided the evidence and testimony I needed to answer my questions. One of the most important words in the Torah is ana, because ana is given in four of the seven Moed Mikre. The Moed Mikre from Kara is an invitation. Dod used Kara earlier in this psalm, Mizmor, saying that I invited, I read and recite, I welcomed Yahweh. That's Kara, Mikra. So, the seven Moed Mikre are all invitations from Yahweh. And Yahweh's instruction on these dates is to Kara, for us to respond, for us to answer those invitations. And so, here is Dod saying, this is the one and only doorway of Yahweh. Those who are right shall approach and enter. I have chosen to acknowledge you, knowing that you have chosen to acknowledge me. Because indeed, you responded to me and provided evidence and testimony I needed to answer my questions. Why should we answer Yahweh's invitations? Because he provides the information we need to answer all of our questions. You asked me to respond, to provide information regarding you, a declaration and witness concerning myself and being preoccupied, concerning Dod being preoccupied, thinking about Yahweh, singing songs comprised of a melodious lyrics to Yahweh. That's what ana means in this case. And you have become my means to approach my salvation and my Savior. Pretty stunning.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how could a Christian ever read 118:20 and ever talk about Dod again?
I don't know. I just don't know.
The slam dunk is over. I mean,
so anti-Christian.
And they preach it in every pulpit. Dod all the time.
Yeah. He's not only being opposed by Gentiles, which is the entire composition of the Christian church, but he is also being attacked by the plague of death, which is Christianity.
Yeah. It's... Wow.
So, in spite of all of this, during the weekend and following the Yada Yada Shabbat program, James, you received the following letter from Fred. It begins, "Hi, James! Exclamation point. I knew I was going to bring division when I made the comment that Israel and those that are spiritual Sodom." And he wants to say that Israel is spiritual Sodom. Yahweh says a lot of things about Israel. And he does say that he has seen behaviors that are akin to Sodom. But he never says that Yisrael is spiritual Sodom. They aren't.
Nope. Out of context, Fred.
Out of context. Yeah, out of context.
Well, and if you wanted to make the argument that, the nation of Israel today is engaging in the stuff that's not, the same argument can be made of most parts of America. Yeah, the world today is falling into the state of Sodom.
Of course. Of course.
I mean, what we've been told is going to happen. Yeah, the country of Israel is no different than every other country in that regard.
No.
Yeah. He then goes on, let the cards fall where they will on that. And what he's saying is that, from his point of view, Israel is Sodom. Below is a series of my arguments and a few videos. I'll leave it there. You know, you said, James, that I am convinced this is true. The reason that Fred's site and message has been comprised of videos is that he, like so many who are easily misled, is overly influenced by the spoken word. And the spoken word is, you know, it's how Hitler deceived. It is how Obama got people to vote for him. Now, I think you even mentioned that there were a survey to look at the difference between the spoken and the written word. A bunch of people were given, this was done in a normal test mode, were given writings of Obama speeches, and they read them, and they said, okay, but nothing special. And the same group of people were given, were able to listen to Obama deliver the same speech, and they were wowed.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so Fred has become enamored with the spoken word, of particularly made available because of these internet Facebook videos.
Facebook, YouTube.
Oh God, they're out there, and they are just utterly pathetic. Anyway, my final thoughts are, considering the DSS are so, the Dead Sea Scrolls are so fragmented and have to be completed using a Bible or the Masoretic text, well, Ptolemy II brought the six Hebrew scholars from each tribe and quarantined them, separating each tribe from the other to translate the Hebrew into Greek. And when comparing the copies, they hardly found any discrepancies from one the other. Then that tells me that we have a pretty accurate idea of what Yah had written in the Hebrew. So when I revisited the NT, the New Testament, and now knowing the players, I started seeing a completely different message from before. I tackled this during our program this afternoon. The fact is that the Septuagint is almost infinitely, by a magnitude of probably a million to one.
Atomic bomb.
More fragmented than are the Dead Sea Scrolls. The oldest example of the Septuagint dates to around between 75 and 125 BCE. It is about a third of one chapter of the body. That's it. The next fragment dates to somewhere between 50 CE and 50 BCE. It is also a very, very tiny fragment, about two lines out of the out of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's interesting because in it, carries Yahweh's name. And how do you think Yahweh's name was presented in the pre-Constantine, pre-Christian version of the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew?
I'm going to guess they actually wrote it out in Hebrew.
In Hebrew?
Yeah, they did. So if you look at the fragment, Yahweh's name is written in Paleo-Hebrew in the midst of the Greek text.
Imagine
that Yahweh's name could not be pronounced, could not be translated using the Greek letters. So that was phenomenal. But anyway, just fragments. The oldest, somewhat complete, unfragmented version of the Septuagint. You know when it dates to? 350 CE. 350 CE, after the imposition of Roman Catholicism. At the time when every Greek New Testament scholar says that the text of the Christian New Testament changed so abruptly as it was no longer even similar to what had gone before. That is the oldest, even partially complete, and it isn't complete. And guess where that copy is? It's in the Vatican. Yeah. It was created. It was created for the Roman Catholic Church.
That's a very credible document right there.
So if you want to know the which one is fragmented, the Septuagint, in terms of pre-Constantine fragments. There's two or three fragments.
That's it.
And that's all they are, is tiny little fragments versus this enormous wealth, the equivalent of thousands of pages of documentation from the Dead Sea Scrolls. And the Septuagint at best was a translation of the Hebrew. The Dead Sea Scrolls are Hebrew. And to fill in the gaps, you do have the Masoretic text. And when we compare the Masoretic text to the Dead Sea Scrolls, we find that less than one word in 14 is different. And most of the differences are of de minimis consequence. Some of them are significant. Most of them are de minimis. To turn away from the original language because you think that the Septuagint is less fragmented is insane. It's ignorant. It's irrational. And this claim that six scholars from each of the six tribes, of the 12 tribes, which would be 70, not 70, and Septuagint means sept or 70. How many tribes were available to, if this were true, how many tribes were available to elicit scholars from at the time around when this claims to be around 250 to 275 BCE? How many?
Two, Yehuda and Benjamin.
Mm-hmm. Those are the two. So you could have had 12. Not 72. Oops.
Fantastical
and,
story.
And this story that they were put into separate rooms, and each of them over 72 days, they created an independent translation, and there were hardly any differences between them. Do you think that was written in the same letter? It was written 600 years thereafter by a Christian theologian to give the aura of credibility to it. The letter, and I will produce the research I've already done dismissing the letter, was written saying that a man that was responsible for the library at Alexandria had requested that this be done, when in fact at the time the letter was attested to have been written, the man had been put in exile. There is an in, the battles that it says that Ptolemy
that
won,
must be incredibly
lost,
difficult to get paperwork from him.
They got everything wrong. This letter is such an obvious fraud. It was written at least 200 years after the time by not a pagan to as it claims, but in fact by a Jew to create the impression that the Torah was a worthy book to consider. In the midst of course, them being persecuted by the Greeks. That's the truth. For someone to believe, as this states, and therefore I'm going to believe that the Septuagint is a better, more accurate impression of what Yah said, is to forget that Origen, 500 years after this false letter was allegedly penned, recognizes too, it was so corrupt, was like the Christian New Testament. There's so many different variations, and they didn't agree, that he dedicated most of his life to taking these variant versions and trying to distill them into one. And even if that pursuit had paid off, and it's impossible to create one truth out of many lies, his Hextapla is lost to history, was destroyed. We don't even have a reference to it. This is an absolute statement born out of ignorance that is wholly and completely irrational. Because even if it were true, and it's not, that the Septuagint were somehow more reliable and less fragmentary, and the opposite is true.
Right.
What would that have to do with the credibility of the Christian New Testament, that we know there are more variations than there are words by almost two times?
Zero.
Yeah,
it's a logical fallacy.
That was the argument I made. I'm like, you know, even if this is true, this has nothing to do with the other.
Correct.
I can look at the evidence for the New Testament. I have I actually have it on my part of my logos. I can bring up the various texts of the oldest Greek manuscripts, and I can look and see the various differences between them. As like I told him in my reply, I've spent time trying to translate areas of the Greek text, and I've come to the conclusion that it is just way more effort than any gain I can get from it. I can pull up, I can look at the Dead Sea Scrolls, I can go, okay, this is what this says, this is what this says, I can look up at the various differences of the word. You get into the Greek text, okay, now you're going, okay, well, I've got three different copies that date to the, first to third century. This one says this, this one says this, this one says this. This is what the modern one says. Okay, right. Now let's see, what are the possibilities? Compare these. Okay, what is possibly being said? It's just a nightmare.
Wow, good case.
Oh, it's a...
Yeah.
Yeah, I stopped after questioning Paul, other than to try to translate Matanya from a Hebrew mindset, and to translate Revelation from the perspective of the prophecies in Daniel. I've just stopped even going there because I recognize that there are three gargantuan prophecies. First half of it is written by the plague of death, Paul. So that's a serious problem. That there's only two eyewitness accounts, three books that comprise an eyewitness account, and the whole lot of it. Matanya, Yao Kanan, and Yao Kanan has been so badly maintained that it's not credible anymore. And the Book of Revelation, of which we have very few copies, and none at the end of the book that received Constantine when there was free-for-all in changing the words to whatever you wanted them to be. So I've come to realize that we only have two eyewitnesses, that the text is 50% of it is written by the plague of death, and that the result is has been so altered that it's not credible, and it's a translation of Hebrew, which was the language spoken at best, and we don't know who did the translation. For the most part, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, that's something I pointed out. Do you think a lot of people in that period who had chosen to follow Yahusha's teaching, how many of them do you think were literate and scholarly? That they were able to sit there and go, okay, read these, properly translate them. They knew both Hebrew and Greek well enough to translate them. These were laymen. These were your average people who were trying to do the best they could. I'm going to give them that, but... they were not
those who were followers of the way, who loved the Torah and prophets, and could read and spoke in Hebrew. What did Hadrian do to them?
I know
specifically what he did.
Persecuted them, killed them.
Well, not just killed them. What he did is he wrapped moistened copies of the Torah around them. And then slowly roasted them to death. Anyone who was caught with the Hebrew prophets and Psalms, speaking in Hebrew about the Torah prophets and Psalms, was burned alive slowly by Hadrian. There weren't very many people left.
I was a human candle in his garden to entertain himself.
Yeah. Hadrian was a demonic, satanic, savage person. He was.
And yet, I would just like to point out, I am not saying any of this because somebody else told me. I have delved into the Greek text and the history of the Greek text, and I've examined it myself and tried to do this myself. And I would say to the spirit, have you done that? Have you looked at the oldest Greek manuscripts? Have you compared them to each other? Have you compared them to the modern Greek manuscripts? Have you done this research yourself, or are you taking someone else's word for it, which you're condemning everyone else for doing? Have you done the research yourself?
Of course they have.
Let me ask you a question, JB. The Revelation, Halon.
Yeah.
How many copies of it are around?
About three, and pre-Constantine, and of those three, none of them go past the second chapter. Yeah, nothing goes past the 17th chapter. And to have that view available within 200 to 300 years of the time that it was written, you don't have much that's reliable. So the best that you can do is assimilate that part of it that is confirmed in Daniel, and much of it is affirmed in Daniel, and that part of it you can rely upon. The rest of it.
Has Yahweh really said anywhere else in his Torah, Jews who say they are Jews but are not, and are of Hashatan? Does he say that anywhere else in Torah? Because I haven't found it.
No.
Okay. So maybe it's just
matter
not
fact,
reliable.
You know, when you look at that, if you're talking about Jews who are pretending to be Jews, who was the Jew that said, "I pretended to be a Jew when it served my interests"?
Paul.
No. And I'm not a Jew. In fact, I've taken a Roman Latin name when it serves my interest. I pretend to be Torah observant when I can gain an advantage, and then among those who are not Torah observant, I'm obviously not Torah observant.
Who was the one that pretended to be a Jew?
Right?
Oh, interesting.
Right. Who was the one who specifically said that I have been demon possessed by a messenger of Satan?
With a thorn in his side. And who did Doug talk about? The ones buzzing around him.
Right. Yeah. Paul.
All of those videos were produced by Christian Christians.
Right. It's Paul.
Least you forget.
Yeah. Absolutely, unequivocally. That's what he's talking about. Particularly at that time. He's talking. What city does he begin in?
Ephesus.
That is where Paul and Yahochanan went head to head. Where Yahusha commends those who have still kept their trust in what Yahochanan said, and who have avoided the testimony of the false prophet, which was Paul. And then he stays in that same region, picking towns in that region of Turkey, today's Turkey, for the express reason of each of those towns specifically denotes a church age. And what you find is that the Christian church, the group that has usurped the word ecclesia to define themselves as a church, becomes the seed of Satan. They become married to Baal, married to the Lord, and then he says they're dead. And that's the progression of things, and how he gets from there. So this is speaking of the entirety of the Jewish race.
Interesting.
Is absurd. Because Yahweh never said of the entirety of the Jewish race that they are saved. He said they breached the covenant. But when he said that they breached the covenant, and he said he was divorcing them, did he divorce Yehuda or just Israel, the northern kingdom?
They had a timeout.
Just Israel.
Yeah.
Israel.
Just Israel. It was just the northern kingdom. He did not divorce himself from Yehuda. The word Jew, what is it from? Israel or Yehuda?
Yehuda.
So the likes of Fred will say, well, he divorced them. He separated himself from them. No, he didn't divorce himself from the people you call Jews, from Yehuda. He had work to do through Yehuda. He just divorced the northern kingdom. Now, when he says he divorced them, in that same book, Hosea, does he speak of staying divorced for all time because they're satanic?
Nope.
No.
Nope. He says, nope, I'm going to reconcile myself with them. Yeah, in 2 days.
Yeah, that's Fred. I spent the last couple of months translating Jeremiah 3 and the beginning of Jeremiah 4. And in it, Yahweh is very, chastising, very much condemning Yisrael and Yehuda for their actions. But throughout it, what is he doing? Calling them home.
But he
pointed out everything they did wrong, but in the end, he still wants them.
Yeah, keep in mind, though, Yirmiyah was written for Goyim. It's the only book, actually, that says in its reference, written for Goyim. And the Israelites that are being exposed and condemned for being religious, the religion that they were practicing wasn't Judaism.
Christianity.
It wasn't the rabbinic of Judaism. Wasn't from the Talmud or the Mishnah. They didn't exist.
Nope.
No. The religion he was condemning is kith and cousin of Christianity. Every aspect of it.
The religion of the Lord.
It's the religion of the Lord, born and bred in Babylon. The Babel meaning for Bible. That was the religion he was condemning is Christianity. That's the religion they were practicing. It's a religion that is a mirror image of Christianity. And even then, he doesn't say that they're satanic.
No.
But you're right. Yirmiyah is expressly written to criticize the Yisrael and Yehuda practicing a religion that is the spit and image of Christianity, born and bred in Babel. It says right in the heart of it that two things, really. One is that the greatest sin that's ever been committed by humankind was replacing his name with Yahweh, with the Lord, which is front and center in Christianity. But also that when he returns on Yom Kippurim, on the Day of Reconciliation, he is not going to reconcile himself with the Christian church. No, he's going to reconcile himself with Yisrael and Yehuda.
Mm-hmm.
And that the reaffirmation of the covenant is going to be slightly different in that rather than the Torah being something we can choose to observe or neglect, the Torah, for those who have reconciled themselves with Yahweh, will be written inside of us, as will Yahweh's name. How come any Jesus around? Yahweh's name will be written in their hearts, and a copy of the Torah will be placed inside of everyone, which means that the Torah still prevails. And it means that Yahweh is affirming his promises to whom?
Israel and Yehuda.
To Yehuda and to Israel.
That is it. It's straightforward. It's as straightforward as it could possibly be. This notion that there isn't a single Jew related to Abraham and that they're all frauds.
Who's going to
negate everything that Yahweh has promised. It would require the Christian myth of replacement theology.
Well, you know, that's the other thing, this whole notion that, you know, the Khazar myth, you know, the majority of Jews in Israel today aren't even Ashkenazi Jews.
No.
They are the largest group, but they are not the majority.
No.
Correct.
That would be the Mizrahi Jews.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a
even
really
if you could prove that the Ashkenazi Jews are not real Jews, they're not the majority.
No.
No.
There's a really interesting parallel.
There really are four groups of Jews. If we have an option here, Lisa, and I'm going to let you make the decision. We're 18 minutes past the broadcast time of the show. We are still recording. We'll record for 45 more minutes. We can dive into your research now and go through it, or we can do your research next week during this program. It's just jump straight into it at the beginning of the show, and I don't think my sense is that no one is upset that we spent time looking at Doe's approach to this because that turned out to be
it's very helpful,
enlightening.
It's very enlightening.
And while I enjoyed reading your rebuttal to Fred's claims, you're not as enlightening as Doe.
No way.
No way.
So, I might be a poet bedtime, but nothing like those. Yeah.
So we have the option, and either one of the two, we have more rebuttal also from James, and we're going to have a show next week in the observations program as a rebuttal from Kirk. but we can present your findings now for the time that we have left, or we can begin them now and complete them next week, or we can just begin them fresh next week.
I would prefer to begin them fresh. I would just like to make one interesting parallel that Dee just wrote to me. Very insightful.
Okay.
When she talks about them encircling and surrounding, and literally the genetic trail shows that the Jews are genetically isolated from the lands in which they were exiled. Literally, they were set apart.
Yeah, very.
Encircled and surrounded by goyim.
Yeah, they're probably the only people, I think they are, the only race to survive being dispersed among all the countries of the world, to have not assimilated.
Isolated.
Yeah. Now, they have assimilated some. But the degree that they are isolated and separated is unique in human history. There is nothing anywhere close to it. And, you know, as I study this, the majority of Yehudim were dispersed around the globe. In fact, next week I will do as you've asked, which is to translate Yeshaya 11 and 12, because Yahweh says the places he's calling them back to Israel from. We have Jews all over the world. I mean, we know that Jews in Iraq and Iran existed in the hundreds of thousands prior to 1948, when Israel was declared a nation, at which point they were exiled from Iran and Iraq. And there were hundreds of thousands of them. We know there were hundreds of thousands of Jews in Russia who were persecuted under the Stalinist regime, which is interesting. They helped create communism. For reasons Lisa, you'll explain next week. And then they were persecuted by the communists. They tried to assimilate, and for assimilating, they were annihilated.
They were punished.
They were punished. Of course, they were brought into Europe by Titus, and then by Hadrian, and the hundreds of thousands as slaves into Europe. And so they existed throughout Europe. From 70 and 135 CE. So there are Yehudim and Israelites throughout Europe, throughout the regions of Iran and Iraq, because they were hauled off into Babylon. That's why Yathrib was a town filled with two-thirds Jews at the time of Muhammad. That's why it was called Yathrib, by the way. And, of course, there were many that remained in Egypt. There were many that went to Egypt, particularly Alexandria, during the during Hadrian's purges.
And before that, Cyrene, which is Island.
Right.
Yeah, Elephantine Island.
And they were kicked out of Spain by Muslims, and they went into Morocco and Tunisia and the like. We have evidence of Jews being dispelled out of Israel all around the globe. And they come from pockets all over the world, but their DNA, some, I think, to a degree of 85%, 88%, traces back to out of Israel. Those are the facts, and that's what we will pursue. There is about 12% of the DNA that can be traced elsewhere. And it's interesting. One of the things that Kirk found out in his research is that the first exile of Jews as slaves was the Northern Kingdom, and they were taken by the Assyrians. And you know where they were taken? Where we find the Khazars. They were taken to where we find the Khazars. You know why they were taken there? The Assyrians wanted them to be a buffer between them and the Median Persians. So there was a group
when they fail, and when they fail because they got defeated by the Persians let them go. They said, "Where do you want to go?" They said, "You can go back to Israel if you want." And they said, "No."
Yeah, well, some of them did, but a lot of them went deeper into the Caucasus region. Yeah. They kind of dispersed in a number of different places, but some of them stayed there. So there were some Jews in the Caucasus region.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. Yeah, imagine
where you want to be.
That is not.
Yeah, there's evidence also of some staying around Upper Syria.
Yeah, living
area.
Yeah, Jews living within the Khazarian community, just as Jews living in Alexandria were not Egyptians, they were Jews living in the Egyptian realm of Ptolemy. The Jews living in Germany were not German ethnically; they were just living in Germany. I mean, Hitler didn't care that they were living in Germany, that they had German citizenship. He made them wear Stars of David and had Jude written underneath them because they were racially Jews. And
yeah,
it's interesting that Fred, in his letter, he says, Hitler called them bastards. Boy, when you have to stoop to justify your position by quoting
Hitler, that's the authority.
There are certain people you don't quote even if you agree with them.
Oh, gosh, no. Hitler. We know that Hitler called the best. Then the next paragraph, he quotes the man that God despises far more than Hitler. I would say the man that is probably number three on God's most all-time hated list. I think Paul's number one. Muhammad's number two. But you know what number three is?
Adrian?
You know what number three is?
Rambam?
No. Not Akiba, not the Rambam, although they probably make the top five.
Yeah.
Hadrian.
Oh.
Hadrian.
Yeah, Hadrian is easily the third hatest
man.
He quoted Hadrian in the next paragraph.
Wow.
Yeah. By the way, what we're going to do for those listening is that we will produce, it's not ready for publication yet, but we will produce a written report. It's already 38 pages. It'll probably be 60 pages by the time we're done. But a 60-page report that provides everyone's contribution to refuting Fred's anti-Semitic vitriol. So,
and if we're incredibly lucky, he might read it and actually, stop being crazy.
Not a chance. Not a chance. You know it, I know it. He's doubling down, becoming far worse. We'd like it to be so, but because we'd like it to be so, doesn't make it so. And I'm not even sure we really want it to be so. You can't be this deranged, hateful, spiteful of Yah's chosen people, and want to be part of the covenant family.
It's just such a shock. I've had so many intellectual, reasoned conversations with him. He didn't just seem like such a rational person. I loved engaging with him and discussing with him, but when on this,
I shared a lot.
I tried to engage him rationally. I spent 2 days working up a reply to him, 5-page reply back.
Yeah.
I haven't heard nothing from him aside from being included in a couple more videos.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry, if that's all you can do to respond to me, I'm done. I'm not going to push it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the videos are all you can stomach. The videos are so repulsive.
I'm sorry. So you can't take the time to write up a reply. You can't write it and put it in your own words. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
If all you can do is send me what somebody else has said, I don't need it.
Yeah. It's really sad.
I've tried to reason with Fred several times, and to no avail. Sometimes I feel Yehuda is put here to really, we are to rightly decide, all of us are to rightly decide that which is correct, honest, verifiable, and true.
Yehuda is those who relate to Yah and who are related to Yah. They are the messengers of Yah. They are the implements of Yahweh. They are the chosen people of Yahweh. And so there is nothing more important to humankind than the witness of Yahudim when they are acknowledging Yahweh. The rest of us are just invited guests in the house of Yehuda, in the house of Yisrael, in the covenant.
We're just along for the ride.
We are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Yao is kind enough to adopt us, but we're adopted into the family of Yisrael, into the family of the covenant. And the covenant was created with Hebrews for on behalf of Yisrael and Yahudah. That's who it was created for and with, and that's 100% of what we know about it has been conveyed through God's message through Yisrael and Yisraelites.
Yes, you cannot hate Yahweh's bride. It's impossible.
And then not be part of it. Well, you can hate his bride. A lot of people do. A lot of people hate the chosen people. And Fred will say, well, I can hate them because he's created this myth that they no longer exist and they're all imposters and they have, every Jew is out, is sinister.
It's
kind of like
Hitler
images of the Jews got these, the fangs and the ugly nose and sinister eyes.
The greasy hands,
and they're lurking behind every stone and every store and every newspaper to entrap and enslave and fleece the Gentile. That's his mantra. And by demeaning the Jews, by casting dispersions on them, by claiming that they are not the descendants of Abraham, but instead satanic imposters, then he can discard them and hate them and not feel like he's being an anti-Semite in doing so. But listen, we wouldn't be discussing his vitriol if it were not for the fact that his conspiracy is the oldest and worst in human history. That it is the most disparaging of Yahweh's testimony and purpose and people. If it was not for the fact that he is promoting it in an audience not of his own creation, but in, amongst those who have come to know Yah through the books I've written and the shows we've done together. And if it were not for the fact that he's using Yahweh's name, Yahusha's name, and terminology that's found only in these books to present his deplorable lies. These are the reasons why it's essential.
If it was someone that we never talked to, none of us knew, but they were promoting these kind of lies in Yahweh's name, we'd have to address it.
We would address it if they did so in our company. You know, if David Duke says something stupid about God, I don't care. If the Pope does, I'll probably expose and condemn it just because he is misled by 2.5 billion people. But if some guy has got a blog, there's a million internet blogs that are anti-Semitic. Yeah, I am not going to go to any of them to listen to
them. But if they were doing it using Yahweh's name, I would still be able to refute it.
Right. Right.
I'm aware of it, and they're using Yahweh's name. I feel the need to at least address it, because otherwise you run the risk of somebody coming across this and thinking that this is what Yahweh has said.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm not going to engage that individual or that person, but I will address it and put that out.
Right. That is correct. And so for all of these reasons, it's essential that we expose and condemn what Fred is saying. Because the conspiracy that Jews are not Jews, that God hates them because they become satanic, that they're stealthily lurking to affect everyone's lives, they're plotting against the Gentile, they're demonic and don't deserve to live. All of that is of Satan. All of that is in direct opposition to what Yahweh loves, what he has planned to do, how he has planned to do it. It is all in direct opposition to the covenant, to the Torah, to Yisrael, to Yahudah, to everything is important to God. And so, therefore, we have to do what we have done. And we will continue to do so. We'll dedicate the next program to it. And we'll learn a lot in the process, because Yahweh has made countless prophecies about his chosen people, particularly in the last days, and what's going to happen. And all of them necessitate what Fred has said to be wrong. If Fred is right, then Yahweh is an untrustworthy liar.
And this is a 2,500-year-old lie. It's utterly disgusting.
Yeah, this lie. I think this lie first became propagated with the Assyrians attacking Israel, and then you know, it became part of the Philistine. Well, in fact, first would be the Philistines. Even the Egyptians, of course, what they did to the chosen people. So the Egyptians may have been the first, followed by the Philistines, followed by the Assyrians, followed by the Babylonians, followed by the Greeks, followed in spades by the Romans. Of course, the ultimate institution to be anti-Semitic, to call Jews Christ killers. The Roman Catholic Church. Yeah, think about how stupid that is. The Roman Catholic Church is the grew out of Imperial Rome, and Imperial Rome is the one that killed by crucifixion the body of Yahusha, and yet the Roman Catholic Church, as the emissary of Imperial Rome, claims that the Jews did it. Boy, that is
The blame the Jew game.
Blame the
Jew
game.
Yes, we know it well.
Yeah, blame the Jew game. Listen,
we
Jews
know
are
it
not
well.
Perfect. Jews aren't perfect. The Judaism today is a
mess.
It really is a mess. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Wasn't it Solomon who said there's nothing new under the sun?
Yeah. Judaism today is a religious mess. But if you're going to attack Judaism, because the videos that Fred has presented all misquote the Talmud to create the image that Jews are conspiring to rape and plunder and kill Gentiles. And nothing can be further from the truth. That's just not what the Torah, or the, excuse me, the Talmud says. Not what the Talmud says.
If you reverse that statement,
hurt people.
Yeah. Right. And,
if you reverse that
statement, right.
It's the goyim who want to kill the Jews and rape them and loot them.
Of course. Yeah. The reason the Talmud exists is that the Roman Catholics were persecuting Jews, and so it's an abused child, as you mentioned a week ago, crying out. It's the nature of the Talmud. Doesn't excuse it. But if you're going to criticize the Talmud, do so accurately.
Good.
And don't blame
say,
all Jews on the Talmud, because very, very few Jews follow the Talmud. Very few. You know, certainly less than 20%.
At least directly.
Yeah. Very
They follow
Jews.
The teaching of their rabbi, but they don't know where it's coming. It's the same as Christians
but that's
with
only,
the Bible.
That's only 30%.
Very few of them read it. They follow what the priests tell them.
Right.
Most Jews aren't even religious. They don't even go to synagogue much.
Right. Read the Talmud. The first, the Talmud does not say those things. And number two, well, the Talmud is wrong. If you're going to refute the Talmud, do so accurately, not as the videos that Fred has presented do. And do not condemn all Jews because of the Talmud, because 70% of Jews are secular.
Yeah.
They're not religious. And almost all of the Jews that are accused by these anti-Semites of being Zionists, 100% of them are secular. They're not quoting a...
Imagine that.
Imagine that. So it's just every aspect of it is wrong. Now, is it okay occasionally to criticize the politics of Israel, like when Netanyahu capitulated and removed the metal detectors? Yeah, I think that was stupid. I think it was really stupid. You know, I'm not going to condemn Jews as a race or Israel as a nation because politically Netanyahu capitulated. No. I think it was a bad decision. I'm not sitting in his shoes. Don't know why he was compelled to capitulate. But, you know, as you pointed out, metal detectors were just installed around Mecca, and so Muslims are saying it's this terrible thing that Jews have done to their Temple Mount to install metal detectors, but yet it's okay for for Saudi Arabians to install them around Mecca.
Yes.
The hypocrisy of Islam is and the world at large.
Stunning.
Related to Jews. Yeah, it's just like the world wants to condemn Jews for building houses and yet won't condemn Muslims for mass murder.
For building bombs.
Yeah, for building bombs.
For turning people into bombs, more accurately.
Yeah. Yeah, most of these videos, by the way, talk about the Jews being the terrorists and killing little Muslim babies and usurping the rights of the mythical people known as the Palestinians. They're just
anti-Semitic. Blame the victim.
Right. Blame the victim.
It's very Islamic.
You know, what's interesting is that when Hitler became a mass murderer, the Jewish race wasn't condemned. In fact, he was an Austrian. When people throughout history have done horrible things, it's almost never that the race of people are condemned. You know, in America, you were a Benedict Arnold if you're a traitor. What race was that? Does it matter? No.
No.
Race is only germane in people's mind if it's a bad Jew.
Yes.
That's it. Otherwise, the race is insignificant, it's immaterial. We aren't told, we don't care who the perpetrator was. Unless it's a Jew, and then we want to blame all Jews based upon the nature of that individual. You know, we don't care that the vast preponderance of bankers are goyim. But because there are Jews that are bankers, let's blame banks on Jews.
Take them out individually because right. They're a Jew.
The vast majority of people in the media are goyim. But if there's some Jews, let's blame the Jews for controlling it. It's just so irrational, so unfair. You know, I'm just so disappointed that people would go stoop to that, but they do. The preponderance of mass murderers, the preponderance of the most evil people in the world, are not Jews. In fact, I'm not aware of any time that Jews decided, you know what we're going to do is we're going to try to conquer and oppress people outside of Israel, of our tiny little sliver.
No, it's just a giveaway land for
them. Yes.
Give them the land. Make them shut up.
They fought foes in Israel. Yeah. This tiny little sliver of land. But, you know, look what the Romans did. Look what the Greeks did. Look what the Carthaginians did. Look what the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Egyptians.
Yeah.
Yeah, America. I mean.
British, Spanish.
Yeah, the British. Right.
Expand.
Expand. What did Hitler call it? Elbow room.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to conquer Europe because we need a little elbow room. That wasn't the history of the Jews. They are the antithesis of what they are presented, of the way they are presented. And their fault has been they've tried to blend in terms of becoming productive members of the nations in which they live.
Well, their fault is they want to be like just like they did in Samuel. They want to be like everybody else.
We want to be like everyone else.
No, you
don't. That's why they hated the embedded communism. They thought that they could be perceived as comrades, as a fellow worker. They would just fit in, and this vitriol towards them would cease. Fitting in is what got them, get them in trouble. Being separated and distinct is what keeps them alive.
Every time Jews have tried to assimilate in heavy numbers, they have paid for it dearly with their lives. Anyone who studies Jewish history knows this.
Yeah, because the Kazanian myth is all based upon a man who is you will go over whose reputation is not so good. A man who got heavily into spiritualism, which is with cavorting with demons. Heavy abuser of the most damaging drugs.
Hallucinogenics.
Hallucinogenic drugs. And ultimately committed suicide, convincing his wife to do so in the middle of a seance kind of experience.
This sounds like a guy I want to follow. Where do I sign up?
His
name is Arthur Koestler.
Koestler.
And he's a very disturbed man.
Yeah, Koestler, who was Jewish. The reason that he came up with this theory that Kazanian are the people pretending to be Jews, and there are no Abrahamic Jews, was that he figured, because he had been tortured by the Russians, you know, he helped create communism and then was actually imprisoned and tortured by the Russians. He grew up in Germany and managed to avoid the Holocaust. And so he came up with this idea that if there was no such thing as a race of Jews, if the race known as Jews didn't exist, there'd be no reason to hunt them down and kill them. And so the whole myth of the Khazarian Jews, that the Jews are no longer Jews, was to defeat anti-Semitism by creating the myth that there really are no Jews. So there's no one to hate. Oh, of course,
horribly.
It isn't. And his arguments was so specious and so poorly documented and so incredible that he did far more harm than he did good. But that's the basis of the myth. He specifically wanted to create the impression that there were no Jews racially, and if there were no Jews, there would be no one to pursue and hate. And of course, that was right after writing.
Now we just hate them for pretending to be Jews.
Right. That was right after writing The God Who Failed, which was his autobiography. Yeah, this is a swell guy. This is where
the God
I
Who Failed.
Yeah, right, that reminds me, the guy who did the DNA study that proves that they're not Jews has actually, you actually look up the guy, he actually doesn't believe Abraham ever existed, Moses ever existed. He believes there was never a Jewish race to begin with.
Yeah, right. That's true.
All right.
Yeah, he does believe that.
Yeah, and his DNA study by geneticists all around the world, including the leading geneticists in the world, all say that's not his. He didn't do a DNA study. This is not a scientific
study. He took a study that had been done and just analyzed it differently.
No, they all say what he did was create his own political mantra, that he has perpetrated a political myth and not promoted scientific research, that his scientific research is non-existent. It's strictly a myth. And every geneticist in the world that has been asked to comment on it has said it's untrue. As a matter of fact, as you found out, two of the most Jewish-hating people in the world, one is a self-loathing Jew, Bernard Russell, has said it is absolutely felonious that the whole myth that Jews are not descended from Abraham. Don't go there. It's preposterous. And even David Dukes, the head of the KKK, says, oh, come on. I'm not going there. That is absolutely preposterous. He may hate
this
Jews.
This is too stupid for me.
But the idea that Jews are not Jews, even David Dukes knows. And David Dukes, by the way, did a fair amount of research on the...
he really did.
He actually did. He came to the conclusion, no, that is utterly preposterous.
The comparison I used was to the Christians, the young earth Christians, who will take one study that was done and it shows that, they carbon dated this and the carbon dating was wrong, therefore carbon dating is invalid.
Oh, of course,
when I looked, there were like some 14 or 15 studies have been done on the DNA of Jews.
Right.
And every single one of them, other than this, came to the exact same conclusion that it is incredible how intact they have stayed,
right,
how isolated they have kept themselves genetically.
Right. Right. And how they're
this
all derived from
this is the only study that didn't prove it. And when you look at how he analyzed the data, it's insane. It is
insane.
So beyond belief.
It is. His work is akin to the fellow that lives down there in Texas with you, JB,
yeah,
who created the myth that autism is a derivative of Abrams measles and rubella vaccine, and he did so because he had a singular mumps vaccine that he wanted to market, and so he specifically went after the prevalent vaccine for the express purpose of denouncing it in a bogus study to promote his own. There are millions of people around the world that believe it's a conspiracy, and he is no more credible than is the fellow that did the DNA, air quotes, research. So this whole thing is just utterly revolting and disgusting, and we will...
Like I said, going back to the whole not trusting man, I sat there and I read through this guy's entire research paper, and I read through about three other DNA research papers. I called my brother-in-law, who's a doctor, to help explain this stuff to me, because it is complex. But like I said, I took the time to do this on my own, so I'm like, okay, what did his research say? What were his methods? Okay. And to me, just as a layman, I looked at his methods and his reasoning, and about four times in his thesis statement, we assume this, we take this, we substitute this for this. He makes like four assumptions in his thesis. Well, you know what the saying is in computers: garbage in, garbage out. If your assumption's bad, your results will be bad. And his assumptions made no sense.
I think I found, and I think Lisa, you found one geneticist who said it's very likely untrue, but wouldn't discount every aspect of it because there's about 12% of the DNA that is unaccounted for shows some assimilation. So 88% of the DNA. That's accounted for. It takes them back to the...
I'm
going to
get into that 12% number also.
Later. But with 88%, even if that is the number that drives back to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, and Yisrael, then Fred's proposal that zero of those in Yisrael are actually descendants of Abraham...
is a logical fallacy.
Is a logical fallacy, absolutely. Yeah. And this is important because what we're going to find is over the next 10 to 15 years, these kinds of lies against the Jews, the same kind of lies that led to the Holocaust and to the rise of Hitler to power, that permeate Mein Kampf and the Quran, that these kinds of Jews, lies are going against Jews and Israel and Zionism are going to become more prolific. They're going to grow and grow. More and more people are going to accept them, endorse them, come to hate Jews, which is why Yahweh specifically says, I've got to bring the remnant of my people back to Israel because they won't be able to live. They won't be able to survive in these countries because the majority of people are going to believe the rubbish that has somehow corrupted Fred's mind.
This kazarmis
is
global.
Really
it's dangerous. Jews in France and in London and in Germany are being attacked physically, verbally, abusively over this lie.
Yeah.
And
so it is,
people
it is
will die over this.
It is essential that we cover it. First and foremost, because everything that we do as a family, first and foremost, the most important audience is Yisrael and Yehuda. Yeah, I'm glad the Gentiles have become part of covenant of Yahweh's covenant family. I'm a Goyim to the best of my knowledge, and I'm delighted to be incorporated into the family. But the fact is that Yahweh's message is for Yisrael and Yehuda, and through them,
first and foremost,
and for them, first and foremost, and so everything I've done has been first and foremost for the edification, enlightenment, and restoration of Yisrael and Yehuda.
Just like when you
somebody
wrote Prophet of Doom, it was Muslims.
Right, to awaken them. So if somebody is twisting what I have written to promote this kind of despicable lie against the very people that I've worked so hard to help, that Yahweh loves so much, there is nothing you can do that's worse than that. And so we're going to take the time to expose this myth, because it does a lot to explain how people have lost the ability to think. And that really, and Roy has written a letter, and I wrote him back, and we'll share that as part of this research, that right at the heart of all of this is that through religion and through socialist, secular, humanist indoctrination, the vast preponderance of people affected by one of the two has lost the ability to think. And if you can't think, you can't find God. If you can't think,
no.
You're going to be easily misled by these kinds of deceptions. Fred's logic is non-existent. His claims are ignorant and irrational, and he's subject to them because he's not thinking. He doesn't know how to be discerning when reviewing evidence, who to trust, who not to trust, what to consider, what not to consider, and how things are related so that you can form a valid conclusion. He's lost the ability to do that.
Well, then, and you get up the in the morning, to do that, there's Torah, and you go to bed at night and you read the Torah, like Yahweh said, and
yes.
Brain gets better.
You have questions? They're in the Torah. The answers are in the Torah.
Yeah, you know, I was frustrated by all of this until today. And today I spent, you know, all day. I didn't get anything done today other than I translated Mizmor 118. That was a really fun day. I had a really good time.
It sounds like a great way to spend your day.
Yeah, you know, I'm not.
We had a fun time just listening until you read it.
Yeah, I had a really fun time.
Right.
You know, so, and you know, it's nice to hear. Yeah, well, encouraging us to do as we're doing.
Yeah. We're on the same page, right?
We're on the same page. We're on the same. You know, you want to be on the same page with Dode. That's a really good idea. Yahweh loved him, vindicated him, thought he was right, loved him as a son. Good as it gets, man.
Yeah.
I will. I'll stand in line behind Dode any day and every day.
I'm Yehuda. We love Dode.
Oh, yeah, we love
Dode. Dode's our man.
Yeah, that was one of Fred's comments was, yeah, anyone who thinks we should follow Dode versus following Yahusha is wrong. Well, the thing is, I know more about what Dode said and did than I know what Yahusha said and did.
Right.
So I can't follow Dode's example. Following Yahusha's example ain't really possible because we don't know exactly what he said or did by and large. But Dode, we know a lot of what Dode did. We know a lot of what Dode said.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Yahusha was Torah observant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Dode was Torah observant. If you're following Dode, you're following Yahusha. If you're following Yahusha, you're following Dode. There isn't a distinction between the two.
No.
Now, it's true. We know infinitely more about Dode than we know about Yahusha. And the most important things we know about Yahusha were actually conveyed through Dode.
Yeah. I'll run it.
Yeah.
The bloodline from Dode.
Right. Right. And I would ask you, when Yahweh returns, is he establishing the kingdom of Yahusha or the kingdom of Dode?
Kingdom of Dode.
So who should we be paying attention to?
Dode. Dode tells you exactly how to walk in the Torah.
Right. You know, the difference is that Dode was born as a human. Human mother, human father.
Yep.
And he is called the Son of God. Yahweh says, he is my son and I am his father. Now, if you want to be the son to Yahweh as your father, who should you follow?
Dode.
Now, Yahusha was a very special case. You know, he was a child born to us, a son given to us. I can't come to the Father the way